The Shell Show. The Shell Show, starring Joe Cook, and tonight's guests, Sonia Henie, Queen of the Skate, Larry Adler, King of the Harmonica, Mae Questel, Betty Boop herself, Miss Cornelia Otis Skinner, Marilyn Miller, the Royal Swedish Bell Ringers, Arthur Fole, who sells wild animals, and Giovanni Martinelli of the Metropolitan Opera. Another spectacular hour of entertainment from soup to nuts, and all presided over by that nuttiest of nuts, Joe Cook, and the music by Ernie Watson. Let's go, Ernie. Security number 56210-3528, Little Joe Cook.
Thank you, Foster. Thank you. I know my first guest tonight is going to please everybody, especially the boys, because I don't know anything the average boy would rather play next to hooky than a harmonica. I remember when I was a kid, I always looked forward to the day when my mother would save enough coupons from the boxes of Mother Nature's health salve for the relief of falling hair and spreading toes to get me a harmonica free. And I used to go out in the cornfield and practice with an ear of corn, sliding it up and back across my mouth. And do you know that by the time I got the technique down pat, there wasn't an ear of corn within 12 miles. And the government had to put all the crows on home relief. But tonight we have with us a young man from Baltimore, internationally regarded as the finest harmonica player in the world. Right now, he's on his way to Hollywood to make Broadway Melody of 1937. Recently, he played before the Duke and Duchess of York, and the boy was so good that 2 weeks later, they became King and Queen of England. Tonight, he plays for us, and 2 weeks from now, there's no telling where we'll be. Mr. Larry Adler. Before you start playing, do you mind if I ask you a question that seems silly, but has been bothering me for quite a while?
Well, you go right ahead, Joe.
What I want to know is whether any harmonica player you ever knew got excited in the middle of a number and instead of exhaling, inhaled and swallowed his instrument.
I never heard of that.
Well, it's something to think about. You know, you boys have an extra risk that no other musicians have, and I think you should be paid more. Now, you take Stokowski. Now, he's got a whole orchestra. He might get excited and swallow, say, a piccolo player, but he still has 40 men left. You make one mistake and you swallow your career.
Well, Joe, that's something I'll take up with the union.
And another thing, does harmonica playing enlarge the mouth?
Oh, what makes you ask that?
Well, I've always had a feeling that in her youth, Martha Ray must have played one. Maybe she got that way kissing tuba players. Tell me, Larry, did you pick up the harmonica or did you study?
Oh, I just picked it up.
Is that so? Mm-hmm. You know, my uncle is a harmonica player, but he came to it by accident. When he was a baby, he had a habit of foot and putting it in his mouth. So one day they took his foot out and stuck a harmonica in, and do you know, he never knew the difference until 18 years later when they took him to the city to buy shoes.
Well, that's a marvelous way to get a musical education.
No, I heard him play the other day, and I wish he'd put his foot back. Did you use more than one harmonica, Larry?
I just used one, Joe.
Well, I once saw a harmonica player giving a concert, and every five notes, he'd reach into his pocket and grab a different harmonica, stick it in his mouth and play it and switch again. Well, it would have worked out well if he hadn't forgotten that he had a hot dog in one pocket. For right in the middle of a cadenza, we got 6 bars of Pennhauser and 8 bars of Get Along, Little Doggy, Get Along. Now that you know you're speaking to a real music critic, Larry, play something difficult.
All right, I'll play Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
Well, that certainly is a difficult piece. I can't even play it on a kazoo. Go ahead, Larry. One time in vaudeville, when I used to play night after night to a sea of smiling faces. Well, sir, one night I looked up for my juggling and darn near dropped 2 elephants in the grand piano because the sea had dried up. There was just one old withered face in seat 14, row G, snoring loudly. So I pulled an alarm clock out of my pocket, stuck him with a pin, and woke him up. He said not a word, but took the pin and pointed to the theater across the street where Otis Skinner was playing. People were pushing and shoving and battling for tickets. Well, I thought of the 10 cents I'd taken in at the box office and the thousands of dollars that Otis Skinner was taking in, so I pulled out my old pearl-handled .45 out of my pocket, and I said to Skinner, "This town isn't big enough for both of us. One of us must go." So Skinner went down to the depot, put me on the train, and away I went. But, as I have so often said, forgive and forget. And as talent seems to run in families, I'm mighty glad to have Otis Skinner's famous daughter drawing the crowds in here tonight, Miss Cornelia Otis Skinner. Miss Skinner, I've always enjoyed your sketches, especially the historical ones, like the Empress Eugenie.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. The Empress Eugenie is one of my favorite characters, too. I like everything about her except one thing.
What's that?
Her hat.
Well, I don't blame you. They don't look very good on me either.
But tonight I'd like to leave the Empress Eugenie and turn to American history in the days of the 49ers. It was about this time of year that gold was discovered in Sutter's Creek, California. Our scene is the porch of a shack in one of the small mining settlements. A New England woman who has migrated out with her husband and little son is sitting talking with her husband's brother. Nice evening, ain't it? Didn't go up the gulch today? Well, I don't know as I blame you. Oh, I ain't been doing much. Been looking after little Jonathan, mostly. He ain't been feeling well. I don't know, the water or something don't agree with him. At any rate, he's been running a fever. Have to be so careful there being no doctors around. It's a problem with the child out here. Nathan helped his claim. Yes, it is pretty near played out, that stream. But we still got hope, Nathan and me. Ain't seen you going out lately, Tom. Haven't been feeling bad, have you? You haven't given up hoping, have you? Oh, Tom, what makes you give up hoping? Most about the only thing we got left, any of us. Well, I do. I think there's plenty of gold right here in Gospel Flat, only you've got to persevere somewhat. What you going to do, Tom? Nothing much you can do. Back home. You are for good. Oh, Tom. How soon? Is there an emigrant train in a month? Santa Barbara, you're going all the way by boat. My, that'll take a long time, won't it? Be winter when you're round Cape Horn. Hope won't be as stormy as they say it is. You'll land in Boston, I suppose. Oh, Just think of seeing Boston again. You take a stack of letters for us, won't you, for the folks back home? Oh, my. Oh, won't they be glad to see you, though, your mother and father? And soon you settle a bit, you'll go out to Salem to see my people, won't you? Tell them we're all right. Doing as well as could be. Oh, my goodness. You haven't told Nathan. He'll take it hard, you, his brother, giving up. Well, it's your life, Tom. A proposition. What is it? Take little Jonathan with you.
What for?
Give him a proper education. You ain't told Nathan that. He'd think it a good idea. Yes, it is a good idea. This is no place for a child away from God-fearing people and the proper schooling. Yes, he would be better off back home. And I don't think he'd be happy without his mother. And Tom, I'd die if he was to be taken away from me. You're a man, Tom, and you don't understand the ways of women folk. You don't know what it means to give up all your love and come out to a wilderness where you have to put up with bad water and hardtack. Back home, I was somebody. Life was decent and sweet. There was neighbors and church meetings and tables with fine silver. Out here, it's all quiet. Solemn and quiet. Nights when Nathan has to stay out near a claim, I lie awake listening to the wind and the timber. As a coyote comes and howls over in the hollow there. What do you think I'd do them nights, Tom, if little Jonathan weren't here? If I couldn't go tuck him in, if I couldn't watch him sleeping. Life's a pretty lonely thing as it is, Tom. As without little Jonathan. I just can't even think of it. I see the men day after day going out with their picks and shovels and night after night coming home empty-handed and heart-sick. Then all but a few like Nathan gets drunk and lawless. He needs little Jonathan, too. We've been through too much, the three of us. The long trek out here, the Indian raids, and the blizzards crossing the Sierras. I couldn't let him go. Me go, too. No. I'm staying here. You know, I got a queer notion about this California. You and me, we hate it because it's taken us away from all we love. But I think someday it's going to be a great and fine place. You and me won't see it. We're just the pioneers. But little Jonathan will see some of it and his children will see more. And it ain't going to come through finding gold. I think it's going to come through tilling of the soil. Things grow better out here. Don't think my heart don't ache for home, but I'll stick by my man. And I know he won't leave. You going, Tom? Tom, you won't say anything to Nathan about offering to take Jonathan. Oh, Tom, look at the sunset. All gold. Looks like all California's being washed in that gold light. Nice day tomorrow. Good night, Tom. All California. Is that coyote howling again? Nathan's late. Guess he's staying the night in the gulch. Oh, I wish the coyote would stop howling. Oh, yes, Jonathan. Mother's coming. All right, honey. I'll be right there.
You know, I'm beginning to think that I'm a natural-born scientist. For years, I've been saying it's not good for your health to get up out of bed as soon as you wake up in the morning. And now a French doctor comes along and he says the same thing. Come on, Bob Waldrop, tell us about it.
A person should stay in bed for about 20 minutes after waking, declared Dr. Maurice Auguste Boisget in a speech last Tuesday to the French Academy of Medicine. Dr. Boisget explained that while a person is sleeping, the circulation slows down. To jump out of bed before the blood is circulating normally is bad for the health. Now, the oil in your automobile acts in much the same way. When your engine is not running, almost all your oil drains back into the crankcase. Then when you start your engine, if this oil doesn't begin flowing right away, 100 close-fitting parts rub and grind against each other for a few moments. The damage is so great that starting your motor just once can cause more engine wear than 50 miles of steady driving. But now there's a way to check this wear from starting. Golden Shell, a new fast-flowing motor oil, starts to circulate the instant you step on the starter. Even in zero weather, it gets up between those moving parts right away. Besides, Golden Shell is tough. It holds its body and stands up under high engine temperature. Keep your motor powerful and smooth running. Ward off engine repair bills. Have the proper winter grade of Golden Shell put into your crankcase right away.
When a person lifts dumbbells, that's muscle building. When kids ring doorbells, that's Halloween. When a fellow courts the belle of the town, that's expensive. But when four fellows ring a lot of bells that make music, that's the Royal Swedish Bell Ringers. Ring that bell and walk in, gentlemen. Now, let's see. Just because you fellows are Swedish, I don't suppose that would necessarily make you related to Garbo, would it?
No, we don't think we go home just you.
Tell us something about the business of being a Swedish bell ringer.
A royal Swedish bell ringer.
Oh, yes, excuse me. But now that you brought it up, why do you call yourselves the royal Swedish bell ringers? Have you ever played before the king of Sweden?
No, but we played for his brother.
Oh, you played for his brother. Did you win him? Oh, no, I don't. You didn't mean it that way. But what about the bell ringers in Sweden? Is it pretty common over there?
Yes, in the Scandinavian countries, everybody rings bells.
That must be where the brush salesmen come from. But describe your instruments and methods a little for us.
Well, we use 206 bells, different bells, arranged in tune, steps, but somewhat like a piano. All are played by hand, of course.
Played by hand, no push buttons, huh?
And it requires four men to play our arrangements.
Well, it looks like four men's work just to arrange them on the table there. Well, why don't you give me a ring?
All right, the bells of St. Mary's.
Bells of St. Mary's. Too bad this isn't January the 1st. Two of you could ring out the old year, and the other two could ring in the new. But ting-a-ling, gentlemen, on the upbeat, and don't ring the wrong number. Here we go. Isn't that pretty? There are really 206 bells on the table. The four boys playing the entire set. Bells ring from tiny little things up to size you can hardly lift. Another one. Play one of your old Swedish folk songs. Nothing like those old folk songs. This makes my Swedish blood boil. Was Melander Smartberg. Away I'm going.
Introducing the Shell Show Ice Parade of 1937, starring one of the swellest skates to drape his figure on any radio rink, Joe Weak Ankle Cook.
Da-da-da-da. For the first time in America, I can now execute a standing, sitting, one and a half pirouette on skate, ending in a spread eagle. This trick is terrific.
Here we go. Steady. Watch this. Hey. Hey.
I don't know. It worked well when I tried it on the carpet at home. Oh, my God. And it looks so easy when she does it. Well, nothing ventured, nothing sprained. I'll try it again. Here we go. La, da, da, da. I shall now, for the last time anywhere, try a flip over, skid under, double somersault, pinwheel spin, ending in the hospital. This trick is impossible. Here we go. Watch it. Hey. Watch it. Watch it. Watch it. Watch it. There's no use talking. I never should have gone to see that picture, One in a Million. That girl makes things look too easy. But my bumps are easily straightened out when I realize that as my honored guest tonight, I have captured the lovely star of that picture, the glorious girl whose grace and charm are enough to melt the iciest heart, Sonja Henie.
Thank you all, and thank you, Joe, for your very lovely introduction.
Well, you're a girl it's easy to say lovely things about, Sonja.
You sure happy I am that you invited me here tonight. I brought you a little gift. I hope you will accept it.
Oh, a gift for me? How nice. What is it?
Open it and see for yourself. It's something to complete your skating outfit.
Oh, something to complete my skating outfit. I wonder what in the world that could be. A pillow. Now, Sonia, you know I shouldn't skate with a pillow. It wouldn't be graceful.
But the way you skate, Joey, it would be more comfortable.
Well, I guess you're right at that. Seriously, Sonia, do you think I could ever learn to be a skater?
Yes, I think so. I'm sure I could teach you very quickly.
Well, how long do you think it would take you to teach me?
I should say about 8 lessons.
8 lessons, huh? How many fittings? What is the first thing you need to be a great skater?
Skate.
Fair enough. What, no ice? You know, I always thought a little bit of ice now and then wouldn't hurt.
And you have found out that a little bit of ice now and then, this hurts.
Plenty. To tell you the truth, Sonia, I never realized until I took up ice skating that soft water could freeze so hard. Now, when did you first start to skate, Sonia?
When I was 6 years old.
And how long did it take you before you could make a figure eight?
Not long. You'll find that making a figure eight is real easy. You try it.
Yeah, I've tried making figure eights. And I find it much easier to make 8 figure ones. You know, Sonia, my father was really the originator of figure skating.
You were? I never heard of that before.
Well, I never told that before. Yes, my father used to do figure eights, 16s, 23s, and very often fractions. On the Evansville sliding pond, only, of course, he used skates with 4 runners.
That's funny. Figure skating on skates with 4 runners.
Sure, that's why they called my father the forerunner of figure skating. You know, my uncle was quite a skater, too.
You were? Could he make figure eights, too?
Well, frankly, Sonia, the first figure eight he made came out of 7. A 4 and a 3.
Well, he must have been a cheapskate.
Oh, now, let's not discuss that. I understand that your father was quite a skater.
Yes, Joe, but he was a speed skater. The second fastest speed skater in Europe. He wanted me to be a speed skater, too.
But you wanted to be a figure skater. And, Sonia, if I may say so, a girl with your figure figures to be a figure skater.
Thank you, Joe. But really, I don't consider myself a figure skater, exactly.
What? A girl who was 10 times the world champion and 3 times Olympic champion figure skater considers herself something else? Well, that's modesty for you.
Well, what I mean is, I want to be more than just a figure skater. I want to put together skating and dancing, because I love both those arts.
And you're an artist at both. Did you ever study ballet dancing, Sonia?
Oh, yes, for many years. I studied ballet dancing even before I taught those skating. I adored the grace of Pavlova.
Well, I'm sorry I never took up ballet dancing, so you could adore me, too.
You don't have to, Joe. I adore you for your quick wit and good spirit.
Good. Then I won't take up ballet dancing after all. But tell me, Sonia, was that real ice you were skating on in the picture?
Oh, yes. They built a beautiful ice ring, especially for me.
Well, I heard they substituted skim milk for the water to make the ice rink photograph right. Did you really skim over skim milk, Sonia?
What do you think?
Well, I was just wondering if frozen skim milk is any softer to fall on than frozen water.
You'd have to find it out for yourself, Joe.
Yes, I guess I'll have to come out to Hollywood and fall down sometime. What do you do to keep fit, Sonia? Do you eat much before your exhibition?
Practically nothing.
Nothing?
Practically.
How about having dinner with me tonight?
I'd love to. My next exhibition does not come until Monday night in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and Boston. And tonight I'm just starving to that.
Yeah, I know it. It had to happen to me. not changing the subject, but you were born in Norway, weren't you?
Yes, in Oslo, Norway. And even before you ask me, I'll tell you. I'm 5'2", have brown eyes, weigh 110 pounds, and have blonde hair.
Well, you did anticipate my question. You look delightfully Norwegian. That dimple in your chin when you smile and that twinkle in your eyes. Now, wait a minute. There's something un-Norwegian about that twinkle in your eyes. If Inspector Cork is not mistaken, there's a little bit of Irish in that twinkle in your eyes.
You're right, Joe. My grandmother was Irish.
Sonia, your Irish dialect is better than mine. Say that again. Now, that's worthy of me. Just once more now. I want to hear that.
You're right, Joe. My grandmother was Irish.
Oh, thank you, darling. All right.
Anything else I can confess to you tonight?
Not a thing. But you might tell me, though. Now, this is right. What is the most important thing for a skater to remember?
A good skater always keeps a cool head.
And a poor skater, just the opposite.
The Shell Show, starring Joe Cook, and yet to be heard from Betty Boop, Arthur Fole, the animal salesman, Marilyn Miller, and Giovanni Martinelli. In just a moment, we continue. WEAF, New York.
Around the middle, but looking a little thin on top because he's not quite all there, Joe Cook.
Last week we had Walt Disney's Chicken Lady with us, so tonight, to prove that we don't show any favoritism, we arranged for Max Fleischer to ship us that coquettish cartoon cutie, Betty Boop. And as soon as Foster pulls the last nail out of that packing case, I feel pretty sure that the little lady who hops out will be Mae Questel, Betty Boop in person. You look lovely this evening.
Oh, thanks. But you look kind of pale and scary.
Well, you'd be frightened, too, if you were in my shoes, because last night I had a nightmare. The kind I'm sure that might scare the boldest pirate clean out of his skin.
Tell me all about it. But not too loud, don't shout it. First, lock the door so no ghost can get in.
Well, this story is a thriller.
Stop, Jack the Giant Killer.
No, the giant who ate spinach every day.
Oh!
It seems he lost his spinach.
Uh-huh.
It was stolen, that's the spinach. That made the giant mad enough to slay.
Where's my spinach? Did any of you three blind mice steal it?
But the blind mice had no answer. They skipped like belly dancers. They knew the crook, but didn't want to tell.
Oh, well, they should have ordered told them. If I was there, I'd scold them. No, I don't think I like them half as well.
Without his can of spinach, he weakened by the inning. The giant finally fell down in a heap. The puss in boots felt sorry. Said, giant, don't you worry. I'll get your spinach, old pal, or I won't sleep.
Goodbye. And did you go and get it? Or had somebody at it? Hurry up before the giant dies.
Now, please don't get excited.
No.
You're going to be delighted.
Oh.
Cause puss in boots to those three mice was wise. Puss knocked upon their front door with both her hind and front paws. She thought she'd bribe them with a piece of cheese.
The little rat.
The trick was just like magic. But those three mice were tragic. And soon they begged for mercy on their knees.
Goody, goody. Did they tell Puss where to find it? Did they name the crooks behind it?
They blamed it all on those three little pigs.
Oh. Did Puss in Boots go calling?
She found the three pigs sprawling beside a cozy fire made with twigs.
The late pig.
The spinach was still heating. They hadn't started eating meat. Let's get to the finish. When the giant took his spinach, the piggies cried. Their tears fell with a bang. The giant was elated. He up and celebrated. And he rounded up his cronies in a gang. And gosh, how they did hoop it.
And did they boop-a-doop?
Why, you know they did, because you got up and sang.
Along with you at times.
One half the world doesn't know how the other half exists. There are many strange ways of making a livelihood, and probably the most novel businessman in this country is Arthur Fole. He is the only man who makes an exclusive business of selling wild animals to zoos all over the world. He's here with us tonight and has brought a few very strange and rare animals with him. May I introduce Arthur Fole, his animals, and Joe Cook.
You might have mentioned me before the animals, Foster.
Yes, I might have, but I didn't, did I?
Well, apology accepted. It's all right. Now, Arthur, how do you get these wild and strange animals you sell to zoos? Do you go to Africa and such places to hunt for them?
No, I'm not a hunter, Joe. I'm what is known as an animal broker.
Oh, a broker. Well, what's amalgamated alligator selling that now? And would you advise me to sell preferred giraffe short?
I'm afraid I couldn't advise you on that, Joe. An animal broker doesn't handle that kind of stock.
Well, just how does an animal broker handle things, Arthur?
I have agents all over the world, and when a certain animal is wanted, I wire or cable my agents, and they rope it for me.
Wire, cable, and rope. Sounds like a rather nice tie-up.
Yes, but actually it takes more than wires, cables, and ropes. It requires all sorts of traps and nets.
And what are your net profits when you net a rare animal?
Well, my stake all depends on how rare the animal is.
You mean your stake is only medium if it isn't rare, huh? Or maybe it would have been just as well done if I hadn't said that. But what is the rarest animal you know of, Arthur?
Well, if you want to make some money, all you have to do is to get an okapi. It would be worth at least $10,000 or $15,000.
Well, they must be thrifty to be worth that much. Are they gold-plated, or what is it?
No, they're very odd-looking. The okapi looks like a mule, has a neck like a giraffe, and its legs are striped like a zebra's. They hide in the deep jungles of the Congo.
Well, if I looked like that, I'd hide, too. Foster, can't you take a hint? isn't there some other animal almost as valuable as the okapi and a little easier to find?
I'll pay a good price for every snow leopard you pick up for me.
Whoa, now, do I look like a snow leopard picker-upper?
Well, how about a proboscis monkey from the Malay Archipelago?
Yeah, how about a proboscis monkey from the Malay Archipelago? What is it?
Simply a monkey with a very large nose. Here's a picture of one.
Monkey with a large... Gee, Whittaker. Jimmy Durante up a tree.
Joe, how would you like to buy a cute little hippopotamus from me?
Yeah, I always wanted a cute little hippopotamus, Arthur. Just how much do you get for a nice, affectionate, semi-convertible man-eating hippo?
With a rumble seat?
Oh, we got to have a rumble seat.
Well, hippos usually run from $3,500, Joe.
Well, that's why I'm different, Arthur. I usually run toward $3,500. But that's a little more than I intended to spend.
Well, suppose I make you a real bargain. With every hippopotamus, I'll give a lizard free.
Oh, bank night in the jungle, huh?
Yep. Buy the hippo and I'll throw in a double-headed lizard. There he is. Isn't he cute?
Hey, he really is double-headed. He's got two heads.
No, one end is the tail. Both ends are exactly alike.
Well, where does he put the ice bag when he has a headache?
I admit it's confusing.
Yeah, my father used to carry a quarter with two heads. It was very confusing. And annoying, but very profitable.
Perhaps you'd like to buy a nice, friendly polecat.
A polecat?
Yes, I have one right here.
So long, Arthur. Now, get me out. You think I'll leave for a while? I'll let you out of here.
No, Joe, don't go away. A polecat's not a skunk.
Oh, you mean there's a difference between a polecat and a skunk?
Yes, they're really entirely foreign.
Well, see that they're deported, will you, Arthur?
Now, don't be afraid, Joe. See how friendly he is? He's 7 years old. He's what furriers call Fitch.
Oh, so that's the 7-year Fitch, huh? You know... He is kind of cute. I wish I could speak polecat. I'd like to ask him what he thinks about skunks in general.
He'd probably tell you they have a lot of sense.
Where do you get most of your animals from, Arthur?
Mostly from Africa, South America, and a few from Asia.
You know, I get my pork chops from Crossmeyer's meat store, if you're interested.
Oh, yes. Of all the animals, I like to handle pork chops best.
And which animals do you dislike to handle best? Plankfurters?
No, the one I like to steer clear of is the Australian cassowary.
Cassowary?
Yes, if you've never seen one, it's a bird that looks something like an ostrich and kicks like a mule. I was feeding one once, and without warning, it kicked me on the head and knocked me for a loop.
Is that so? Well, what were you feeding the cassowary when he kicked you?
A nice pan of raw sweet potatoes and ground oyster shells.
Ground oyster shells? I don't blame him for kicking. I'd have done the same thing. Well, Arthur, I've certainly learned about animals from you. And the next time you see a laughing hyena, ask him what he's laughing at. I'd like to know. Well, so long, Arthur.
So long, Joe.
Good night. Right across the street from my house in Evansville is a very famous building, the home of the great stage star Marilyn Miller. I followed Marilyn's career from her stage debut at the age of 4 right through the time when she was New York's favorite musical comedy star. And just this afternoon, I met a beautiful 16-year-old girl, and I was surprised to find that her name is also Marilyn Miller. Her mother admired the great star so much that she named her baby after her. Well, after hearing this Marilyn Miller sing, I'm going to watch her career, too. She was planning to leave New York this afternoon, but I persuaded her to stay and sing for us. She still has a suitcase in her hands, and it's a pleasure to present, for her first major network appearance, Miss Marilyn Miller. Marilyn, did you ever see Marilyn Miller on the stage?
Just in her 2 movies, Peter Pan and Sally, but I was quite young. I don't remember much about them.
You don't happen to come from Evansville, do you?
No, I'm from Baltimore.
Well, that's a good town, too.
Won't my friends down there be surprised to hear me?
Yeah, I can't wait to hear you myself. Go ahead, Marilyn, and I wish you all the success that the name of Marilyn Miller deserves.
Moments ago, Arthur Foles told us about a lot of strange animals. Now, Bob Waldrop wants to tell us about a queer animal, too. He calls it a rabigator. All right, Bob.
Well, imagine an animal that has the good points of an alligator and a rabbit rolled into one. Now, take first the alligator, for instance.
Hey, mister, I can tell you about a gator.
All right, young man.
He is for gators. His manners are rough. Do not disturb him. He's apt to get tough.
Well, that's fine. Now, can you tell us about a rabbit?
Sure. R is for rabbit. He's shy, but he's fat. Don't try to catch him. He'll sure come in last.
That's great. Now, if you mix them both up there, you've got a rabigator. He's a 2-in-1 critter with tough gator hide, whose rabbit-like legs make him fast in his stride.
Oh, he's a make-believe animal, isn't he?
Yes, the rabigator is an animal we thought up for telling car owners about a new kind of motor oil, Golden Shell. You see, some oils have been fast-flowing and some other oils have been tough. But to check the heavy wear from starting, an oil is needed that's both tough and fast-flowing. And now, by a new refining process, we do make such an oil, Golden Shell. Like 2 oils in one, it's tough and it's fast.
It cuts starting wear and how it does last.
Or 60 years ago, while I was still in my early 20s, which is pretty remarkable considering I'm still under 40, almost, not quite, I made my first trip to New York City on a train. And the first thing I saw was a vacant lot. So I said to myself, Joe, why don't you build New York City a Metropolitan Opera House like they have in Evansville? So I took $1 million and a fried egg sandwich out of my pocket and started working. 2 months later, both were finished. The Metropolitan Opera House and the fried egg sandwich. And I don't know which I like best. That was doubtedly the beginning of opera in New York City. And now that we all have such a clear misunderstanding of opera, I hardly think, I'd like you to hear one of my protégés, a man who owes all that he is to me, a man who I trained from a young boy, a man who I wish was here tonight so I could introduce him to you. But unfortunately, he is not here, but seriously, though, we are really very fortunate in having a great star of the Metropolitan Opera Company. I only wish I had something to do with his rise to fame. He has just completed a triumphant engagement in the title role of Verdi's opera Othello and will open the coronation season in the Royal Opera House at Covent Garden. Mr. Giovanni Martinelli. Don't you think I described the birth and development of the opera pretty well, Giovanni?
Oh, yes. I especially enjoy your reference to the fried egg sandwich.
Then you like fried egg sandwiches.
Very much.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, which do you like better, fried egg sandwiches or opera?
When I'm happy, opera.
And when you're hungry, fried egg sandwiches, huh? Well, I'm mighty glad to see you looking so happy tonight, Giovanni.
Miei cari amici, stasera canterò per voi il famoso arioso dei pagliacci vesti la giubba.
Oh, thank you for the tribute, Giovanni. Thank you.
Not even to you. I lost just my number.
Pardon me. That's the name of the song. I see. Well, play early yes, and sing, Giovanni. Sing.
Eppure troppo alzati, oh, sei tu fare sangue. Oh, sei pagliaccio. Il cor
Foster, that besides the old Metropolitan Opera House in Evansville, that the first movie theater in the United States was built by my grandfather back in 1865?
Oh, nonsense, Joe. They didn't have movies in 1865.
I know, but Grandpa was a very impatient man. He just couldn't wait. Well, when they started making pictures, I helped Grandpa to run the theater, my father being too young at the time. Of course, that was in the early days of the movies, and there were just two types of pictures, the one in which the cowboys defeated the Indians and the one in which the Indians were defeated by the cowboys.
Well, did you have double features in those days?
No, I didn't have any double features, but Grandpa had two chins. People used to lift up his beard and look at them. Of course, that cost 10 cents extra, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, we were doing pretty well with our movie theater until a competitor opened up across the street and started cutting prices. So, of course, we had to cut our prices, too.
Well, that must have reduced the profits.
Reduced the profits, say. By the time we got through cutting each other's prices, we were giving free shows. But, boy, we certainly did the business.
Well, at least your competitors couldn't do any more damage after that.
That's what you think. But this fellow wasn't through with us yet.
No?
After cutting the prices down to nothing, he started showing double features. And I don't mean tens. And when we did the same thing, he gave triple features. And it went on like that until we were both giving quintuple features for nothing. People came to the theater on Monday with knapsacks on their backs and stayed all week. But luckily, our competitor never showed more than five pictures on one bill. You see, he didn't know what came after quintuple.
Well, by the way, what does come after quintuple?
Well, I wouldn't know, Foster, not being a Canadian. But if you think the competition ended there, Foster, you're mistaken. The next thing we knew, our competitor was giving away souvenirs.
Souvenirs? You mean cups and saucers and that sort of thing?
That's right. He gave a set of dishes to every customer, so we gave a set of dishes and a vacuum cleaner. Then he added a grand piano, and we threw in a house and lot. Well, finally, he was giving away the Grand Central Station and the Brooklyn Bridge. And we were giving Radio City, Grand Canyon, and May West.
Just a minute, Joe. I'm beginning to feel queer.
Yeah, and maybe you think that ended it, but no siree. When our competitor found he couldn't lick us that way, he started giving bank nights. So, of course, we had to give bank nights, too.
Yeah.
Every night in the week was bank night, and every customer got a cash prize.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that, of course, that must have been a smart thing to do at that, because it certainly brought a lot of people into the theater.
Yeah.
Why, sometimes business was so good that we lost $20,000 in a single night. And we would have done better than that if only some chiselers hadn't insisted on paying for the seat. But even so, we managed to wind up the year about $12 million in the red.
Well, I guess that smothered the opposition, didn't it?
No, doggone them, they still beat us. They came out $13 million in the red. Well, we just had to do something about it, Foster, so finally we decided to produce our own picture that nobody could show but ourselves and take away all the business from our competitor.
You mean to say you made a picture yourself?
I'll say we did, and what a picture.
Yeah.
We formed a producing company, United 20th Radio Paraversal Metrolumbia Pictures Corporation, Inc. But we did things on such a tremendous scale, Foster, that we hired King Kong to play a part written for Shirley Temple.
Well, what was the story about?
Well, just about everything, including the kitchen stove, the dining room stove, and the parlor stove, all of which were played by Robert Taylor. And the name of our picture was Wham, or The Story of the Universe from the Creation to the Year 5000 A.D. Every movie actor in Hollywood was in that picture, including the 17 million extras, each of whom had a star part. And the leading lady's role was played by the 50 Dionne Quintuplets.
Yeah. The 50? But, Joe, there are only...
I know, Foster, I know, but that just goes to show you what a colossal picture it was. Foster, when the picture was ready to put on, we put on a grand preview with a stage prologue in which 75 elephants did a fan dance with palm trees.
Well, now, there's just one more thing I'd like to know, Joe. Whatever became of your grandfather?
Yeah, that's just what I wanted to tell you about, Foster. You see, Grandpa always liked to hang around the projection room.
Uh-huh.
That's where we had the machine that showed the pictures. Well, one day he was snooping around the machine when suddenly his beard got caught in it. So in went the beard, and in he went with it. And that's the last we ever saw of Grandpa.
Well, I'll say that was a strange thing.
And that isn't all, Foster. Ever since that time, whenever that machine shows a picture, every man, woman, child, cat, and dog in the picture has had a beard on it.
Say, Foster.
disaster. Could you let me have an umbrella?
I guess so, Joe. Why?
Well, I thought I fell a raindrop. Say, did you feel an earthquake just then?
Why, no. What made you think there was an earthquake?
Well, I thought I heard a wall drop. But if you didn't hear a wall drop, you're about to hear one now, because here he is, Bob Waldrop.
Joe, here's a fact that's hard to believe, but it's absolutely so. You put three times as much wear on your engine while you're starting and warming it up as you do while you're covering ground. Automobile engineers say starting causes about three-quarters of all engine wear. When you step on your starter, your oil is practically all down in your crankcase. If this oil is at all slow about circulating, the close-fitting parts in your engine rub and grind against each other for a while. But now you can check this heavy wear by using a new kind of oil, Golden Shell. It's made by a new refining process so that it's both fast-flowing and tough. It begins flowing instantly, puts a protective cushion of oil between those parts in your engine. Yet Golden Shell is tougher than many slow-flowing oils. It holds its body under high engine temperatures. Don't let starting take the snap out of your motor and give you big engine repair bills. Use this new, better motor oil. Have your crankcase drained and refilled with Golden Shell.
Cook, waiter number 17, and Cook Hamburger and Patty the Full Girl Wagon Incorporated, telling you not to miss next week's menu. On the bill of fare, we have some delectable entertainment for you. Before I take your order into the chef, let me say a word to the Evansville Fire Department, Cook and Ladder Company number 1. That fire in John Manchester's barn, which you put out last week, is still burning.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.